Truth News Network.
Uncertain about what you see and hear in mainstream media?
Worried about getting the truth?
No worries anymore.
Get the truth, only the truth, at TNN, the Truth News Network. Here's your host, Dan Newman.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Truth News Network. Today, we get right into the Robert Mueller story. Robert Mueller Unmasked Part 2. Yesterday, we brought you Chapter 1 of this, as presented by Congressman Louie Gohmert, Republican congressman from Texas. And in this, we have previously, in the past, reminded you of some really startling evidence of Robert Mueller's past. Well, this time we've turned it over to an expert, former attorney, former judge, now congressman from Texas, Louie Gohmert, who's had a whole lot of experience with former FBI Director Robert Mueller. And the congressman has some inside information, some very, very revealing information about Mr. Mueller. Let me say this. If you missed yesterday's story or yesterday's podcast, make sure you go back and get it. It is eye-opening. The first part of it was revealing. This part is more revealing, and we'll move on with the third part in tomorrow's offering. But let's get right to it. Part two, Mueller's five-year up-or-out policy. Congressman Gohmert is actually saying this, and of course I'm reading what he has said and put in print. He goes on, in federal law enforcement, it takes a new federal agent or supervisor about 5 years or so after arriving at a newly assigned office to gain the trust and respect of local law officers. That trust and respect is absolutely critical to doing the best job possible. Yet, new FBI Director Robert Mueller came up with a new personnel policy that would rid the FBI of thousands of years of its most invaluable experience. In a nutshell, after an FBI employee was in any type of supervisory positions for 5 years, he or she had to either come to Washington to sit at a desk or get out of the FBI. In the myriad of FBI offices around the country, most agents love what they do in actively enforcing the law. They have families involved in the community, their kids enjoy their schools, and they do not want to move to the high cost of living in Washington, D.C., and especially not to an inside desk job. What occurred around the country was that agents in charge of their local offices got out of the FBI and did something more lucrative. Though they really wanted to stay in, they were not allowed to do so if they were not moving to D.C. Agents told me that it was not unusual for the special agent in charge of a field office to have well over 20 years of experience before the policy change. Under Mueller's policy, the change to new special agents in charge having 5 to 10 years of experience when they took over. If the FBI director wanted nothing but yes men and women around the country working for him, this was a great policy. Newer agents are more likely to unquestioningly salute the FBI mecca in D.C. and the director and never boldly offer a suggestion to fix a bad idea, and Mueller had plenty of them. Whether it was wasting millions of dollars on a software boondoggle or questionable personnel preferences, agents tell me Mueller did not want to hear from more experienced people voicing their concerns about his ideas or policies. An NPR report of December 13, 2007, entitled FBI's Five and Out Transfer Policy Draws Criticism, it dealt with the Mueller controversial policy. Quote, from the beginning of this year, that was 2007, until the end of September of 2007, 576 agents found themselves in the Five and Out pool. Less than half of them, just 286, opted to go to headquarters. 150 decided to take a pay cut and a lesser job to stay put. 135 retired, 5 resigned outright. In the period of 9 months accounted for in this report, the FBI ran off a massive amount of absolutely priceless law enforcement experience vested in 140 invaluable agents. For the vast part, those are the agents who have seen the mistakes, learned lessons, could advise newer agents on unseen pitfalls of investigations and pursuit of justice. So many of these had at least 20 to 30 years of experience or more. The lessons learned by such seasoned agents were lost as the agents carried it with them when they left. In the 07 NPR report, the FBI Agents Association indicated that the five-year up-or-out program hobbled field offices and takes relationships forged there for granted. In other words, it was a terrible idea. The incalculable experience loss damages the FBI by eliminating those in the field in a position to write or meet with the FBI director to advise him against some of the mounting judgment errors on his part, which were listed in the NPR article. But this was not the only danger done. If an FBI director has inappropriate personal vengeance in mind or holds an inappropriate prejudice, such as those that infamously motivated Director J. Edgar Hoover, then the older, wiser, experienced agents were not around with the confidence to question or guide the director away from potential misjudgment. I also cannot help but wonder if Mueller had not run off the more experienced agents, would they have been able to advise against and stop the kind of abuses and corruption being unearthed right now that occurred during the Obama administration? Rather than admit that his five-year up-or-out policy was a mistake, Mueller eventually changed the policy to a 7 years up-or-out program. I once pointed out to him at a hearing that if he had applied the five-year up-or-out policy to literally everyone in a supervisory position, he himself would have had to leave the FBI by September of 2006. He did not seem to be amused. One other problem remained that will be discussed in more detail later in this article. Before Mueller became director, FBI agents were trained to identify certain Muslims who had radicalized and become dangerous. Mueller purged and even eliminated training that would have helped identify radical Islamic killers. By running off the more experienced agents who had better training on radical Islam before Mueller, blinded us of the ability to identify our enemy, as I was told by some of them, Mueller put victims in harm's way in cities like Boston, San Diego, and elsewhere. National security letter abuses. National security letters, they're called NSL, are a tool that allows the DOJ to bypass the formality of subpoenas, applications for warrants with affidavits in support, and instead simply send a letter to an individual, business, or any entity they so choose to demand that records or documents of any kind must be produced and provided to the sender. The letter also informs the recipient that if the recipient reveals to anyone that the letter was received or what it requires to be produced, then the recipient has committed a federal felony and will be prosecuted. It is a rather dramatic event to receive such a letter and realize that this simple letter could have such profound power and consequences. The committee in the House of Representatives that has oversight jurisdiction over the Department of Justice is the Judiciary Committee, of which I am a member. Remember, this is Congressman Louis Gohmert that's speaking. We have grilled DOJ personnel in the past over the potential for NSL abuse, but both the House and Senate committees were reassured that there were no known abuses of this extra constitutional power. Unfortunately, the day came when we learned that there had been an extraordinary number of abuses. Apparently, some of Mueller's FBI agents had just been sending out demands for records or documents without any probable cause, as the Fourth Amendment requires. Some agents were on outright fishing expeditions just to find out what different people were doing. We were told that there may have even been thousands of NSLs sent out to get documents without following either the constitutional requirements or the DOJ's own policy requirements. When the Inspector General's report reveals such absolutely outrageous conduct by FBI agents, some of us in Congress were absolutely livid. An NBC News report on March 9th of 2007 had this headline and subheadline: Justice Department, FBI acted illegally on data. Audit finds agency misused Patriot Act to obtain information on citizens. The report went on to say FBI Director Robert Mueller said he was to blame for not putting more safeguards in place. I am to be held accountable, Mueller said. He told reporters he would correct the problems and did not plan to resign. The Inspector General went and did the audit that I should have put in place many years ago, Mueller said. Some of us Republicans wanted to completely eliminate such an extraordinary power that was so widely abused. Nonetheless, I could not help but wonder that if Mueller had not run off thousands of years of experience through his 5 years up or out policy, perhaps young, inexperienced agents would not have been so tempted to vastly abuse the power of the NSL. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez lost his job over the widespread pervasive abuses under Mueller's supervision. In retrospect, Mueller probably should have been gone first. It was his people, his lack of oversight, his atmosphere that encouraged it, and his FBI that did virtually nothing to hold people accountable. The witch hunt against Republican Senator Ted Stevens and his tragic death. Ted Stevens had served in the U.S. Senate since 1968 and was indicted in 2008 by the U.S. Justice Department. One would think before the U.S. government would seek to destroy a sitting U.S. senator, there would be no question whatsoever of his guilt. One would be completely wrong in thinking so when the FBI director is Robert Mueller. Roll Call provides us with General Colin Powell's take on Ted Stevens. Now, this is quoting General Colin Powell. According to former Secretary of State Colin Powell, who had worked closely with the senator since his days as President Ronald Reagan's national security advisor, the senator was a trusted individual, someone whose word you could rely on. I never heard in all of those years a single dissenting voice with respect to his integrity, with respect to his forthrightness, and with respect to the fact that when you shook hands with Ted Stevens or made a deal with Ted Stevens, it was going to be a deal that benefited the nation in the long run, one that he would stick with. Such a glowing reputation certainly did not inhibit Mueller's FBI from putting Stevens in its crosshairs, pushing to get an indictment that came 100 days before his election, and engaging in third-world dictator-type tactics to help an innocent man lose his election, after which he lost his life. As reported by NPR, after the conviction and all truth came rolling out of the framing and conviction of Senator Stevens, the new Attorney General Eric Holder had no choice. He abandoned the Stevens case in April of 2009 after uncovering new and disturbing details about the prosecution. Unfortunately for Ted Stevens, his conviction came only 8 days before his election, which tipped the scales on a very close election. Does that sound familiar? The allegation was that Senator Stevens had not paid full price for improvements to his Alaska cabin. As Roll Call reported, he had actually overpaid for the improvements by over 20%. Roll Call went on to state, but relying on false records and fueled by testimony from a richly rewarded cooperating witness, government prosecutors convinced jurors to find him guilty just 8 days before the general election, which he lost by less than 2% of the vote. After a report substantiated massive improprieties by the FBI and DOJ in the investigation and prosecution of the senator, the result was ultimately a complete dismissal of that conviction. At the time, there was no direct evidence that Director Mueller was aware of the tactics of concealing exculpatory evidence that would have exonerated Stevens and the creation of evidence that convicted him in 08. Nearly 4 years later, in 2012, the Alaska Dispatch News concluded, bottom line, Kepner, who was the lead investigator accused of wrongdoing by Agent Joy, is still working for the FBI and is still investigating cases, including criminal probes. Joy, the whistleblower, who was the FBI agent who disclosed the FBI's vast wrongdoing, especially of Kepner, has left the agency. Director Mueller either did control or could have controlled what happened to the lead FBI agent that destroyed a well-respected U.S. senator. That U.S. senator was not only completely innocent of the manufactured case against him, he was an honest and honorable man. Under Director Mueller's overriding supervision, the wrongdoer who helped manufacture the case stayed on, and the whistleblower was punished. Obviously, the FBI director wanted his FBI agents to understand that honesty would be punished if it revealed wrongdoing within Mueller's organization. Further, not only was evidentiary proof of Senator Stevens' innocence concealed from the senator's defense attorneys by the FBI, there was also a witness that provided compelling testimony that Stevens had done everything appropriately. That witness, however, was who agents sent back to Alaska by FBI agents, unbeknownst to the senator's defense attorneys. This key exonerating testimony was placed out of reach for Senator Stevens' defense. Someone should have gone to jail for this illegality within the nation's top law enforcement agency. But instead, Senator Stevens lost his seat, and surprise, surprise, Mueller's FBI helped another elected Republican bite the dust. Unfortunately, I am not speaking figuratively. In August of 2010, former Senator Stevens boarded his doomed plane. But for the heinous, twisted, and corrupt investigation by the FBI and inappropriate prosecution by the Department of Justice, he would have still been a sitting U.S. Senator. Don't forget, one vote in the Senate was critical to Obamacare becoming law. If Senator Stevens was still there, it would not have become law. In the following month, after Senator Stevens' untimely death in September of 2010, a young DOJ attorney, Nicholas Marsh, who had been involved in the Stevens case, committed suicide at his home as the investigation into the fraudulently created case continued. The report expressed no conclusion as to his, Marsh's, conduct, given his untimely death. Robert Luskin, an attorney for Marsh, said, "He tried to do the right thing." If you wonder what happened to the valuable FBI agent who was an upstanding whistleblower with a conscience, you should know that in Mueller's FBI, Special Agent Joy was terribly mistreated. Orders came down from on high that he was not to participate in any criminal investigation again, which is the FBI management's way of forcing an agent out of the FBI. On the other hand, the FBI agent who was said to have manufactured evidence against Senator Stevens while hiding evidence of his innocence was treated wonderfully and continued to work important criminal cases for Director Mueller. If you wonder if mistreatment of an FBI agent who exposed impropriety was an anomaly in Mueller's FBI, the Alaska Dispatch noticed this about another case. Former FBI agent Jane Turner was treated much like Joy, the whistleblower agent in the Stevens case, after she blew the whistle on fellow agents who had taken valuable mementos from Ground Zero following the 9/11 terrorist attacks. She took the FBI to court over her treatment and ended up winning her case against the agency after a jury trial. When you blow the whistle on the FBI, it's death by a million paper cuts, she told the Alaska Dispatch. Turner said that agents who violate the FBI's omerta, those who internally challenge the agency, are undercut and isolated. They, Mueller's FBI supervisors, do everything they can to get you to quit, she said. Here is how Molly Hemingway of The Federalist described this combination: the death of Dr. Stephen Hatfield's reputation and protective life. The FBI absolutely bungled its investigation into the anthrax attacker who struck after the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Carl Cannon goes through this story well, and it's worth reading for how it involves both Comey and his dear friend and current special counsel, Robert Mueller. The FBI tried, in the media, its case against Hatfield. Their actual case ended up being thrown out by the courts. Comey and Mueller badly bungled the biggest case they ever handled. They botched the investigation of the 2001 anthrax letter attacks that took five lives and infected 17 other people, shut down the U.S. Capitol and Washington's mail system, solidified the Bush administration's antipathy for Iraq, and eventually, when the facts finally came out, made the FBI look feckless, incompetent, and easily manipulated by outside political pressure. More from the Carl Cannon cited above, recounting how disastrous the attempt to convict Dr. Stephen Hatfield for a crime he didn't commit was. In truth, Hatfield was an implausible suspect from the outset. He was a virologist who never handled anthrax, which is a bacterium. Ivins, by contrast, shared ownership of anthrax patents, was diagnosed as having paranoid personality disorder, and have a habit of stalking and threatening people with anonymous letters, including the woman who provided the long-ignored tip to the FBI. So what evidence did the FBI have against Hatfield? There was none. So the agency did a Hail Mary, importing two bloodhounds from California whose handlers claimed could sniff the scent of the killer on the anthrax-tainted letters. These dogs were shown to Hatfield, who promptly petted them. When the dogs responded favorably, their handlers told the FBI that they'd alerted on Hatfield and that he must be the killer. Unfortunately, both Mueller and Comey were absolutely and totally convinced of the innocent man's guilt. They ruined his life, his relationship with friends, neighbors, and potential employers. If you want to read the whole thing, the link to that in Real Clear Politics is posted right there in the story, printed on the homepage of truthnewsnet.org. You'd think that any good FBI agent would have kicked these quacks in the fanny and found their dogs a good home, or at least checked news accounts of criminal cases in California where these same dogs had been used against defendants who'd been convicted and then later exonerated. As Pulitzer Prize-winning Los Angeles Times investigative reporter David Willman detailed in his authoritative book on the case, a California judge who tossed out a murder conviction based on these sketchy canines called the prosecution's dog handler as biased as any witness that this court has ever seen. Instead, Mueller, who micromanaged the anthrax case and fell in love with the dubious dog evidence and personally assured Ashcroft, then the attorney general, and presumably George W. Bush, that in Stephen Hatfield, the Bureau had its man. Mueller didn't exactly distinguish himself with contrition either. In 2008, after Ivins committed suicide as he was about to be apprehended for his crimes, and the Justice Department had formally exonerated Hatfield and paid him $5.82 million in a legal settlement. Now, that's the FBI. The FBI paid him $5.82 million? No. American taxpayers did. Mueller could not be bothered to walk across the street to attend the press conference announcing the case's resolution. When reporters did ask him about it, Mueller was graceless. "I do not apologize for any aspect of the investigation," he said, adding that it would be erroneous to say there were mistakes. Though FBI jurisdiction has its limitations, Mueller's ego has none. Mueller and Comey's next target in the anthrax case was Dr. Bruce Ivins. As the FBI was closing in and preparing to give him the ultimate Hatfield treatment, Dr. Ivins took his own life. Though Mueller and Comey were every bit as convinced that Dr. Ivins was the anthrax culprit as they were that Dr. Hatfield was, there are lingering questions about whether or not there was a case beyond a reasonable doubt. Since Dr. Ivins is deceased and had some mental issues, we are expected to simply accept that he was definitely the anthrax killer and drop the whole matter. That's difficult after taxpayer money paid off Mueller's previous victim. Mueller had relentlessly dogged Dr. Hatfield using life-destroying Orwellian tactics. Either Mueller was wrong when he said it would be a mistake to say there were mistakes in the railroading of Hatfield, or Mueller did intentionally and knowingly persecute an innocent man. Folks, this is amazing. Stick with me. We'll be right back with more on the Truth News Network.
How can we say when you book direct at choicehotels.com, you always get the lowest price in our rooms, guaranteed?
Let's get someone to say it with a really low voice. Carl?
Lowest price guaranteed.
What about the world's lowest limbo stick?
How low can you go?
Nice one, Carl.
Hey, I've got an idea. Just say, bada book, bada boom.
Bada book, bada boom.
Nice.
Always the lowest price guaranteed. Book now at choicehotels.com.
Too much spin on your plate?
How about a diet of truth?
The Truth News Network sets your table.
And here again to serve it up is Dan Newman.
Well, the plot thickens. You know, I've heard many times through the years allegations made against someone that, if true, would be extremely damaging to that person. But often people who hear those allegations, especially when they come from a well-known or a well-respected member of law enforcement, like, you know, the FBI director, the default position of the hearer is usually that, hey, If Billy Bob said that, then it must be true. Billy Bob, or Bob Mueller in this case. Mueller, in his investigatory career, very seldom has personally made allegations against others from criminal wrongdoing. But he has continually manipulated the criminal justice system to achieve whatever, in each case, is his ultimate objective. Unfortunately for those who were targets of Mueller's anger, often Mueller's objectives have been successful and have ruined people's lives. So, that concludes part two of our visit down memory lane and where we live today in the life and the investigations by former FBI director, now special counsel, investigating our president, Bob Mueller. One note here, as you probably remember, we're contemplating taking this show live every day, Monday through Friday, from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., Monday through Friday, Central Time. We've asked you to send emails, many, many, many of you have, telling us, yes, we want to do it, we want you to do it, or, hey, just keep going just like you're doing it now with the printed story and the podcast almost every day. You know what? We want to be here what you want us to be. We don't compromise on what our messaging and our methods and objectives here are, which is to find the truth and present the truth. And yes, we present it sometimes with opinion, but when we do, every time we present opinion, we make sure you understand what we're saying is opinion. Facts matter. Facts are important. And that's what we research and bring to you here at the Truth News Network. So what that means is if we do a live show from 9 to 11, that means that you'll be part of the show. You'll be able to call in. You'll be able to talk to us on the air. You'll be able to ask questions, give your opinions. And we'll have guests from time to time live. We just recently had Congressman Mike Johnson from the Louisiana 4th Congressional District on air with us. And you'll be able to talk to those people as they come. And so it'll be good for you. It'll add an extra dimension, a new added dimension to the show. But if you don't want to do it, we certainly don't want to do it. It's more work for us, which we don't mind doing. But if it's not something you're going to get more out of than you're getting out of what you're hearing and reading here right now, we don't want to just add something to it. So I need to hear from you. Dan at truthnewsnet.org. Dan at truthnewsnet. Not network. truthnewsnet.org. Let me hear from you. Let me hear from you this week. And make it simple. Say, yeah, I want you to do it, or no, we don't want you to do it. And then, yeah, 9 to 11 a.m. Central Time works for me, or hey, I can't do that time. Here would be a better time. The reason we picked that two-hour slot, just to be honest with you, is that leads up to the nationally broadcast shows of Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity. And believe me, I don't want to go up against those guys. They are pillars of conservative media, and they are really, really good. But we're contemplating leading up to it, depending upon what you advise us to do. Dan at truthnewsnet.org. Give us a minute. Doesn't take long to write that. Just tell us what you think. Really appreciate you joining us every day. Oh, we've got the next chapter of this tomorrow. Make sure you come back. You can get it in writing, and you can also get it as a podcast. You're listening to that today. Thanks so much for joining us every day here at the Truth News Network.
No identity politics, no political elitism. Read and hear the truth, always sourced from facts. This is TNN, the Truth News Network, right here at dnewman.org.
I got a pain in my side, but I can travel it on.
Apparently, the risk was worth it to Mueller, so he could show the members of Congress who could harass or destroy them whenever he wished. Apparently, the FBI just knew the right federal judge who would disregard the Constitution and allow Mueller's minions to do their dirty work. I read the application for warrant and the accompanying affidavit for warrant to Ray Jefferson's office, as I did so many times as a felony judge. I could not believe they would risk such high-profile case just to try to intimidate members of Congress. In the opinion of this former prosecutor, felony judge, and appellate court chief justice, they could have gotten a conviction based on what they had already spelled out in the very lengthy affidavit. The official attorneys representing the House, knowing my background, allowed me to sit in on the extremely heated discussions between attorneys for the House, DOJ attorneys, and to my recollection, an attorney from the Bush White House after Jefferson's office was raided. The FBI had gathered up virtually every kind of record, computerized or otherwise, and carried them off. I was not aware of that at the time that the DOJ and House attorneys, with the Speaker's permission, had cooperated over the years. No congressman is above the law, nor is any above having search warrants issued against them, which is why Jefferson's home was searched without protest. However, when the material is in a congressional office, there is a critical and centuries-old balance of power that must be preserved. The Mueller FBI spokespeople, along with the DOJ choir, assured everyone that everything was fine. They were going to have some of the DOJ's attorneys review all the material and give back anything that was privileged and unlawful for the DOJ to see. Then they would make sure none of the DOJ attorneys who participated in the review of materials that were privileged from the Department of Justice's viewing would be allowed to be prosecutors in Jefferson's case. If you find that kind of thinking terribly flawed and constitutionally appalling, you would be in agreement with the former speakers of the House, the vice president at the time, and ultimately the final decisions of our federal appellate court system. They found the search to be illegal and inappropriate. Fortunately for the DOJ, they did not throw the entire case out. In retrospect, we did not know at the time what a farce Department of Justice firewall would have been. Now, we do. And folks, we're going to stop right there. We're just getting into the story, the real story, the behind-the-scenes story of Robert Mueller, who is doing his best to put and keep his foot on the throat of this duly elected president. Is Mueller qualified? Does he have the temperament? Is he honest? Does he have integrity that office and anybody in it should hold? That's still up for clarification. You're going to have to make your mind up just like the rest of us do. But I tell you this, it's deep. There's a whole lot more there, folks. And tomorrow we're going to come back for more of the Mueller story, Robert Mueller. Thank you for joining us at the Truth News Network. We appreciate you being here. We're going to do this again tomorrow. Don't miss Chapter 2 at the Truth News Network.
We don't tell you what to think,
but we give you truth to think about. This is TNN, the Truth News Network.
TruthNewsNet.org.